So today, actually the main presenter is going to be Sri Pallad Prabhu, but we're going to hand out to you, first of all, study guide for those of you, as we were explaining yesterday, who are committed to reading day by day the chapters that we're studying. So we want you to have this study guide to help you in your reading. This will guide you in your reading. So this is what we're going to do first, is if we can just have somebody kindly go around and make sure. We have some new persons here, so I don't know if we have enough for everyone, but at least those who were here yesterday and said you want to fully commit yourself to reading, please just put up a finger so we make sure that you get...
Give out to them first.
The boys.
No, the people with their hands up.
Yeah, those with their hands up. And here's one for you. And if there's not enough, then, we'll just have to share or something.
We'll also give to those who are doing part time. Yes,
yeah. If you and everyone who raised their hand yesterday said they wanted to be a full timer. Part-timers will also get. Part-timer means those who are just going to write the essay that we assign each Friday. Now, the thing is, in this study guide, last night, late, I made some last-minute changes, and they're written in red pen, and I feel that you need to understand why these changes were made. Some of them are quite mundane. They're just changing typographical errors. So if you just look under, this will be the third page, under 1.1, chapter 1, question by the sages, versus summary. The second paragraph, last line. Originally, that line ends by saying, the sages begin by posing four questions. This has been changed to three. That was simply a typographical error. And then at the very end of that line, you see the verse credits. In other words, this paragraph, beginning the narration of the Bhagavatam, that starts, the narration of the Bhagavatam begins in the holy place of Naimisharanya, is a summary of some verses, and those verses have been put in parentheses at the end of each paragraph. So originally, the verse credits were 9 to 17, but that's been changed to 9 to 13. I think that you can see that pretty clearly. The number 3 has been written over the 7 in red. And then, because it was pretty late, there's actually a change that's not all that important, and that's only on some of the papers. That's in the very next line, where it says, they then glorify hearing about the Lord, so I inserted, because I was reading Prabhupada's translation, I inserted chanting and hearing. So it should properly read, then they glorify chanting and hearing about the Lord. But on some of your papers you may not have that insertion, but it's not very important. As I said, it was quite late last night. And also the verse credits have been correspondingly changed at the end of this sentence. If the previous paragraph is a summary of verses 9 to 13, then obviously the next paragraph must be a summary of verses 14 to 20. Originally it said 18 to 20, so I changed and read 14 to 20. So far these are really just matters of typographical errors, not very important. But when we come to, if you just turn ahead, to section 1.5, the title to that is Questions 1 through 6 and Their Answers in Greater Detail. In this section, we are actually identifying the verses that express the six questions. Everyone has heard that the Bhagavatam begins with six questions. But for a long time in ISKCON, there's been a discussion as to exactly what those questions are. You know, when we read Prabhupada's verses and translations, many devotees say, they end up asking, what are actually the six questions? So, I followed a summary when I began this work. I started by following a summary of Canto 1 that was done in 1997 by Burijan Prabhu. And he went through that canto with the help of a Sanskrit scholar, ISKCON Sanskrit scholar in Vrindavan. So with Burijan Prabhu's help, we have identified the specific verses of the questions as being 119, in other words, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse 9. 1111, Canto 1, Chapter 1, Verse 11. 1112, 1117, 1118, and 1123. Now, just last night, a question came up. Because we've noted that in another course, I'm not going to say anything more than that, but another course that's being held in ISKCON on this same subject of summary of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the verses, there's been a little bit of difference in how the verses are assigned. So I want to explain that, and I ask you to pay attention to this. That, first you'll see, just below this section 1.5, questions 1 through 6 and their answers in greater detail, something has been crossed out. The sentence reads, next the questions are specifically identified verse as are their answers. Originally there was a comma and it said according to two Bhagavatam commentaries. Now I knew if I hand this paper out, someone's going to raise their hand and say, can you tell us what those two Bhagavatam commentaries are? So what we did was yesterday, we asked Burijan Prabhu what those two Bhagavatam commentaries are, and he replied, I don't remember. So I thought better than to get into some controversy, we just crossed that out. And we're just having faith in Burijan Prabhu's research.
You said in 1.3... You say Vishwanath summarizes the six questions.
Yeah, there is reference to Vishwanath and Jiva Goswami, yeah. But we don't know for sure that, because those are in reference to other things, we don't know for sure if it was Vishwanath and Jiva Goswami who have specifically identified the questions with these verses. We just don't know for sure. Burijan Prabhu says, I forgot, it's written down somewhere, he couldn't find it. So we've just dropped that. So we're not going to take that up. So please don't ask that question. And so the next point, yes, is...
It's the universal two questions.
No, not that yet. Yes, in question three. Question three, which is verse 1:1-12. You see, again, these verses that are shown here are in exact agreement with Burijan Prabhu's 1997 work. In question three, which is 1:1-12, I have inserted a parenthetical note. Verse 13 may be included here. See purport. In other words, question 3 may be considered to be a combination of verse 12 and verse 13. Why is that? Well, I need to start at the beginning by telling you that there is a course being given on the Bhagavatam in ISKCON, which is similarly following Burijan Prabhu's work, using practically the same summaries of verses that are used here. But in that study, they identify verse 13 as one of the six questions. They say in their study guide that verse 13, here, the sages ask about the Lord's incarnations in the process of creation. I'm quoting their study guide. But if you look at Prabhupada's translation of verse 13, this is what you read. O Sutta Goswami, we are eager to hear about the personality of Godhead and His incarnations. So incarnations are mentioned, but nothing about the process of creation. Please explain to us those teachings imparted by previous acharyas, previous masters, acharyas. For one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them. And then in Prabhupada's purport, he is stressing the importance of hearing from the acharyas. And he mentions hearing from the acharyas in the matter of the transcendental topics of Lord Sri Krishna's superhuman activities, his incarnation, his birth, appearance or disappearance, his forms, and his names, and so on. And still there's no mention about creation. So I just became a little bewildered why this other study program would identify verse 13 with the Lord's incarnations for creation, because in Prabhupada's neither the translation or purport is that mentioned. So I spoke with Maharaj this morning. We do feel that this verse 13 is very essential, and that's why we've added it. It seems to be, it follows verse 12, which is a question in which the sages want to know the purpose. The personality of Godhead appeared in the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudev. This is that question. Why? What is the reason for the Lord's appearance? So then in the next verse, the sages say, we are eager to hear this as per the instructions of previous acharyas. Then in the purport, Srila Prabhupada, he mentions also the birth of Lord Krishna, the reason of the birth. But also mentions incarnations, his superhuman activities, appearances, disappearances, forms, his names. And actually, Maharaj, his conclusion was that actually this verse 13 serves as a background condition to all six questions. In other words, all six questions are to be heard as per the instructions of previous acharyas. So that's why we've added that here. It's obviously directly connected to verse 12, because it follows. Verse 13 follows verse 12. That's simple arithmetic logic. But in the purport, Prabhupada expands the subject to seem to include most of what's mentioned in other questions. But it's just interesting to note that the process of creation is not mentioned. So why in this other study guide they have identified verse 13 as one of the questions and said it's a question about the Lord's incarnations in the process of creation. That's not my duty to explain to you, because I quite frankly don't know, and I'm not representing that group which gives this this particular study on Srimad Bhagavatam. So, and that's all I want to say about it, because I don't want to start a controversy. So if you kindly let us just...
It's mentioned in the next question, no?
Yes, we're going to come to that, the question about the incarnations for creation and so on. We'll come to that. So on this subject matter that I've just talked about, another study guide, another course on Bhagavatam, please don't ask me any questions about that. I don't represent them, but because I was looking at their material and seeing their identification of verse 13 in that way, a question raised in my mind, and that's why late last night, after the sun had gone down, I was scribbling in red pen on everyone's copy these changes. We do think that verse 13 is very important, because it is stressing that this knowledge, these answers to the six questions, should come through the previous acharyas. That is very, very important. So that is the background. We conclude that is the background essence to all the six questions. So in our course here, that's what we're going to be teaching. That's what we're going to be hoping you will understand. Now, to move on, this is important. Questions 4 and 5. What you'll see I've done is I've reversed the order. Question 5 now is... question 4. That's the next question after question 3. So question 4 is now Canto 1, Chapter 1, verse 17. Which says, describe the activities of the incarnations of the Lord. Now, when we read Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport to that verse, we find that Prabhupada is actually stressing the incarnations of the Lord in which he reveals his transcendental pastimes in the spiritual world. Now, in Bhurijan Prabhu's original work in 1997, he identified this verse 17 with the incarnations for creation, for the process of creation. But my reading of Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport, I'm just unable to support that position. And I think that if any doubt like this comes up, we have to go with Srila Prabhupada. Does anyone here disagree with that? Do we have to have an argument about that? I mean, we may go back and research and find some previous acharya has written something that seems to be in conflict with what we read in Srila Prabhupada's verse and purport. But we are told, we are instructed that we are not on the level of Mahabhagavatas, so we may not be able to resolve the apparent conflict, so we should simply conclude the conflict is only because of our lack of understanding. We are fallen souls, we have limited intelligence, and we should simply accept the authority of our founder Acharya. So why have I reversed the order of the questions and made verse 17 describe the activities of the incarnations of the Lord, specifically that means of his, in which he reveals his transcendental activities? I want to read to you the verse and purport. The verse says, his transcendental acts, that's how the translation begins by Srila Prabhupada. His transcendental acts are magnificent and gracious, and great learned sages like Narada sing of them. This refers again back to the point in verse 13 of hearing from previous acharyas. Please, therefore, speak to us who are eager to hear about the adventures he performs in his various incarnations. Now, I'm not going to read the whole purport because it's quite lengthy. I want to read what I consider essential here. Those who are not conversant with the activities of the Lord and his transcendental realm are sometimes favored by the Lord in his adventures as incarnations wherein he displays the eternal bliss of his association in the transcendental realm. By such activities, he attracts the conditioned souls of the material world. So isn't that quite clear? Srila Prabhupada is speaking of incarnations such as, of course, the source of all incarnations, Lord Krishna himself, who's displaying the transcendental Leela of Vrindavan, Loka Vrindavan, Lord Ramachandra, who's displaying the Leela of Ayodhya. So, Prabhupada does mention at the end, as the supreme controller of both the material and spiritual world, the Lord has different incarnations of unlimited categories. Incarnations like Brahma, Rudra, Manu, Prithu, and Vyasa are his material qualitative incarnations. So there, yes, the incarnations for creation, maintenance, destruction are mentioned, but then Prabhupada goes on to say in the same sentence, but... That's a very important, but his incarnations like Rama, Narasimha, Varaha, and Vamana are his transcendental incarnations. Lord Sri Krishna is the fountainhead of all incarnations, and therefore he is the cause of all causes. So my reading of this verse 17 and the purport forces me, as Prabhupada's disciple, to conclude that this verse 17 is question 4. Describe the activities of the incarnations of the Lord, particularly those incarnations which display his transcendental activities. And question 5, tell us of the acts of the Lord, tell us of the acts of the Lord performs, this is poor English, I'm sorry. It should be, tell us of the acts of the Lord, that he performs in relationship to creating the material world. So that question should be verse 18. And I say here, see purport. So let's see the verse and purport. The verse, text 18, reads, O Vaisuta, please narrate to us the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Lord's multi-incarnations, such as auspicious adventures and pastimes of the Lord, the Supreme Controller, are performed by his internal powers. Srila Prabhupada's purport, for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material worlds, the Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead himself, appears in many thousands of forms and incarnations, and the specific adventures found in these transcendental forms are all auspicious. Both those who are present during such activities and those who hear the transcendental narrations of such activities are benefited. So in his purport, Srila Prabhupada is specifically speaking of those incarnations who appear for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. So at the urging of whatever realization of Paramatma I have, I felt it necessary to make this change. I will say it's obvious from Srila Prabhupada's purport that these two questions, 4 and 5, are very closely associated. That can be seen in the answer, because here we give the answers to these questions. The answer to question 5, tell us of the acts the Lord performs in relationship to creating the material world, you'll see just next answer. This question is answered in verses 1 to, Canto 1, Chapter 2, verses 30 to 33, wherein the Bhagavatam explains how Vasudev creates the material substance and enters into it as the Purusha incarnations. In addition, cantos 3 and 4 relate the creation of the universe and its population by all species. So if I may, I hope I have that marked. I can find it without much trouble. Unfortunately, I don't. So in the next chapter, that's 30 to 33, yes. So I have it right here. Yes, so Lord is, Srila Prabhupada is definitely, like in his answer to his purport to verse 32, speaks of Lord Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by one of his plenary parts, expands himself all over the material world, and his existence can be perceived even within the atomic energy. Matter, antimatter, proton, neutron, etc. are all different effects of the Paramatma feature of the Lord. So this is definitely about creation. Then Srila Prabhupada writes, oh yes, yes, right here. He's again talking of the material creation. Oh yes, this is in the purport to verse 34, the last verse of chapter 2. Prabhupada begins again. There are innumerable universes, in each and every universe there are innumerable planets inhabited by different grades of living entities and different modes of nature. The Lord Vishnu incarnates himself in each and every one of them and in every type of living society. He manifests his transcendental pastimes among them just to create the desire to go back to Godhead. The Lord does not change his original transcendental position, but he appears to be differently manifested according to the particular time, circumstance, and society. And he talks of the different types of incarnations. But what the point that Prabhupada makes here, I'm sorry, I think he even makes it more clear in another place, but I just can't find it, is that these transcendental incarnations appear through Mahavishnu, who is the first Purusha for creation. So therefore, these two matters, the Lord's appearance for creation and the Lord's appearance for displaying his transcendental pastimes, are obviously very, very closely connected. Because Prabhupada has often said that Mahavishnu, who is the original Purusha from whom Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Chirodakshaya Vishnu, these are the Purushas for incarnation. The other incarnate, the Leela avatars, they enter into the material through world through Mahavishnu. And then they show transcendental Leela of the spiritual world to deliver the conditioned souls. So there's obviously a very close connection. But because of reading these purports and reading the stress that Srila Prabhupada makes in these purports, I have decided to make these last minute changes. And I hope you'll understand why. And I hope that this doesn't result in some big controversy around. But as I say, I feel if there's any doubt that we should stick to Srila Prabhupada's purports. That should be the last word. And I've tried to make that very clear. You have a question?
Can I ask a question on the text or only on this explanation?
On the text of the Bhagavatam.
If it's just what he said, otherwise I would say let Prahlad Prabhu give his presentation.
Is it on something I just said?
Yeah, on the first one. It's not referring to the way you presented this.
Oh, well, we could save that for later then.
Yeah, I think it's just let him make his presentation.
Actually, I went a lot longer. I took up half the time. I'm really sorry. I have to Okay. Touch the lotus feet of Sri Prahlad and ask him now to present according to the changes. Now he will present chapter one.
He's prepared.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So in this overview study of Srimad Bhagavatam, we are today discussing the first chapter, which is the foundational introduction, so to speak, to the Srimad Bhagavatam. In this introduction, we have glorification of the Srimad Bhagavatam. We have the qualifications of one who can study Srimad Bhagavatam. And we have 6 questions which introduce the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. Prabhupada, in his purports to these verses, stresses the importance of studying Srimad Bhagavatam from the beginning. He specifically mentions not jumping to the 10th canto, wherein Radha and Krishna's Leela, or Krishna's Leela with the residents of Vrindavan, is described, but rather to go through the Srimad Bhagavatam systematically, as Srila Sukadeva Goswami presented it to Parikit Maharaj, and Sutta Goswami presented it to the sages of Naimisharanya. Sometimes Srimad Bhagavatam is compared to the form of the Lord. And the first canto, first and second canto, they are compared to the Lord's lotus feet. So in that sense, you might say that this first, we're just expanding the analogy, you might say that this first chapter is like the Lord's lotus toe. And so, but we stand on our feet, and so Srimad Bhagavatam stands on these first chapters, these first cantos. In this, we have the connection to Gayatri Mantra in the first verse, Param Satyam Dhimahi. Gayatri is the essence of the Vedas. Gayatri expands from... it is the sound of the Lord's flute. The Lord initiates Brahma with Gayatri Mantra. And so the Veda expands from the Gayatri and then is later again condensed into Vedanta. And so Prabhupada states in his purports how Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta. And so this we have introduced in the we have the these connections are made in this first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the first two cantos, canto 3 and 4, they are the Lord's legs. In those cantos, then Shankya, atheistic Shankya, is defeated. Hiranyaksha, he represents this, that he is Nirishvara Shankya, that he is the supreme Purusha, and he will enjoy Prakriti, he will enjoy the material nature. And as Kapila, the Lord propagates theistic Shankya. Canto 4, we have a refutation of Karma Mimamsa. Daksha, he represents the archetypical karma kandi. He is Daksha, expert at sense gratification, and that's what the karmi is interested in. So he's performing Vedic sacrifices in order to enjoy, as is Prachina Bharti, performing so many animal sacrifices, and Puranjana. These are examples of karmis. And then the Lord's waist is Canto 5, where we have karma to Jnana. Priyavrata Maharaj gives up karma. Rishabdev defeats Jainism, Buddhism, and so on. Then we have the Lord's chest, is Canto 6. The chest is where the heart is, and the heart is where our whatever is most dear to us is held. And so in Canto 6 we have an emphasis on bhakti, with these stories of Ajamil, who was a fallen Brahmana in terms of Vedic and karma. In terms of karma, then he was destined to hellish conditions, but by the potency of the name, by the power of bhakti, he was delivered, as was Vritrasura, the demon, delivered by bhakti. The arms of the Lord are Canto 7, 7 and 8. The arms take and they give. Prabhupada's father used to tell him that if Krishna wants to take from you what your two little hands can hold, but if Krishna wants to give, if the Lord wants to take from you, how can you resist? But if the Lord wants to give you, how much can your two little hands hold? And so in Canto 7, we have Hiranyakashipu is giving protection to Prahlad. Mohini Murti is taking from the demons. He's taking from Bali Maharaj. He takes everything from him. And Varnashram is described, and Varnashram protects society. The ninth canto, we have the Lord's neck, wherein the genealogies, the genealogical tables, are described, leading up to the appearance of Sri Ramachandra and Sri Krishna. And so the neck leads to the face, and the face, the smiling face, is the tenth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Five chapters specifically are the Lord's smile, which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu describes as the most beautiful feature of Krishna's form. Finally, the 11th canto, which is very lofty and intellectual, Uddhava Gita, Krishna's instructions to Uddhava. And so that's the forehead, which is where the brain is engaged in its functions of analysis. And then the crown that concludes or summarizes the whole of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the 12th canto. So let us now read these questions that, let us read this section listed as 1.1 in the study guide. First canto, chapter 1, 6 questions lay the foundation of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam. Chapter 1, questions by the sages, verses summary. And so, verses 1 to 3, Srila Vyasadeva offers his obeisances to Lord Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and immediately glorifies the Srimad Bhagavatam as completely pure, free from materially motivated activities, and especially nectarian, having emanated from the lips of Sri Sukadeva Goswami. At the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, most famous verse 66, Krishna tells Arjuna, Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. Abandon all varieties of dharma and just surrender to me. And taking up from that very point, Srila Vyasadeva initiates Bhagavatam by saying Kaitava dharma, that Kaitava dharma or cheating religion is kicked out by this Srimad Bhagavatam, and that it focuses specifically on Vasudev, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. And so therefore it is completely pure, free from any materially motivated activities. And it is especially nectarian because of Srila Sukadeva Goswami's love for Krishna. He narrates Bhagavatam with love, and this gives it a special sweetness. Pibata Bhagavatam Rasamalayam, that you, Aho Rasika, how is it? Bhuvi Bhavuka, that thoughtful persons should study Srimad Bhagavatam, which is a rasa shastra, which is a shastra describing the rasa between the Lord and his devotees, the relationship, the exchanges of mellows. Prabhupada explains 12 types of mellow or exchange in his purport to these verses. Continue the reading. Verses 9 to 13. The narration of Bhagavatam begins in the holy place of Naimisharanya, where great sages first glorify Sri Suta Goswami, the speaker of the Bhagavatam, and then begin inquiring from him. Verses 4 to 8. The sages begin by posing 3 questions. 9 to 13. Um, 14 to 20. Then they glorify hearing, chanting and hearing about the Lord, and request Sutta to speak to them about the Lord and his incarnations. And then 20 to 23, 21 to 23. After Sutta describes that the age of Kali has just begun, the sages then ask a final 6th question. Now that Krishna, the Absolute Truth, the Master of all mystic powers, has departed for his abode, please tell us by whom religious principles are presently protected. So in this we have a summary of what is found in the first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam. All the verses have been condensed into basically 3 paragraphs. We will focus on these questions now. On the qualifications for studying Srimad Bhagavatam. This first chapter can be taken in one sense like a Mangalacharna. The Mangalacharna has 4 aspects called Anubandha Chatushtaya. And these aspects are to offer obeisances, namaskritya. We have had this, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, and so forth. There's been a glorification of the Lord. And another aspect is ashirvad, to offer blessings. It's very interesting. I can't remember exactly which verse it is. But we have the sages themselves offering ashirvad to Sutta. Badram te, all auspiciousness to you. Someone may wonder, as I did when I read it, shouldn't the guru or the person sitting on the Vyasasan be offering the benedictions? How is it that here, the listeners, they are blessing the guru? Prabhupada translates it as, all blessings to you. And so that's something that we could discuss if we have time. Another aspect of Anubandha Chatushtaya, or the 4 points to a Mangalacharan, or the auspicious beginning of any literary work in Vedic tradition, is the qualifications of one who can study that work. In other words, there is a teaching, but who can learn it? Manu, in Manu Samhita, gives the qualification or criterion for one who can study the Dharma Shastra. Similarly, Rupa Goswami gives a qualification for one who can actually study Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and get something from it. In other words, anyone can study it. An academic can study Bhagavatam, but they won't get what is supposed to be achieved from that work. So let us now read the qualifications of the student of Srimad Bhagavatam. I'll read the prelude and then the actual 5 points. Along with 6 questions, first canto, chapter 1, presents 5 conditions essential for proper understanding of Srimad Bhagavatam. Unless these 5 conditions are accepted, then the inquiry represented by the 6 questions will come to no fruit. These are summarized from the Bhakti Vedanta Purports, BVPS. 1. One should hear the pastimes, names, and glories of the Lord from Srimad Bhagavatam, in which all material forms of religion are rejected from a bona fide spiritual master. One should become fixed in devotional service and not allow his mind to be deflected to anything else. Patiently and submissively hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam immediately re-establishes a soul in his eternal relationship with Krishna. All other goals are rejected in the Srimad Bhagavatam. 2. One must hear the Bhagavatam from a bona fide representative of Vyasadeva. And I think this is verses 4 to 8. And Prabhupada mentions how Vyasadeva is the author of Vedanta Sutra. And the Vedanta Sutra defeats. Basically, Vedanta Sutra is focused on refuting 6 atheistic forms of Vedic philosophy. Nyaya, Vaisheshika, Yoga, Shankhya, Karma Mimamsa, and the Mayavad interpretation of Vedanta. And so Prabhupada says that no one should sit on the Vyasasana as the representative of Srila Vyasadeva unless they can defeat these or refute these 6 systems of Vedic philosophy. So the point is, one must hear Bhagavatam from a bona fide representative of Vyasadeva, one who carries his line, which is not the line advocated by these 6 systems of Vedic philosophy, but it is the line of bhakti, Bhakti Vedanta. 3. If both the speaker and hearer are qualified, the hearer will easily understand the absolute truth, Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's verses 9 to 13. What's coming to mind here is when Prabhupada was asked to recommend a translation of Bhagavad Gita as it is. And he mentions in his introduction to Bhagavad Gita as it is. Sorry, not Bhagavad Gita as it is. He was asked to recommend a translation of Bhagavad Gita. And he mentions in Bhagavad Gita as it is that one of the things that inspired him to write Bhagavad Gita as it is was this lady's sincere question. Which version of Bhagavad Gita do you recommend? And he said, although there are over 700 English translations, I cannot recommend one of them. And therefore I have to write Bhagavad Gita as it is. So, both the speaker and hearer must be qualified, and then one will understand, the hearer will understand that Krishna is the absolute personality of Godhead. Otherwise not. And then verses 14 to 20, hearing of the ever-fresh pastimes, names, and glories of Krishna will attract one away from the horrible Kali Yuga trap. Is that extracted from Prabhupada's purport, or are those your expressions, the horrible Kali Yuga trap?
Let's take it from Prabhupada.
That's Prabhupada. No? Of the material world to the eternal, blissful, spiritual realm. And then 5, the 5th point, Because of the shortness of life that Kali Yuga brings, one should fear the dangers of Kali, accept the shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, and adopt the process recommended by Lord Chaitanya for self-realization in Kali Yuga, hearing and chanting Krishna's glories, as told in the Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, verses 21 to 23. So obviously, Prabhupada has given these five qualifications of the hearer, but he has extracted it from the verses themselves, from the words of the sages and their actions, both of which display a humility, a sincerity, a mood of surrender. And Prabhupada has extracted their words and behavior to give us these five qualifications of the student of Srimad Bhagavatam that will actually enable them to achieve the fifth principle of Anubandha, sorry, the fourth principle of Anubandha Chatushtaya. I said there were four aspects to the Mangalacharna, and that is Prayojana, the introduction or the Mangalacharna to a work will tell us what the goal of that work is. And so here, in this first chapter, we learn that the goal of Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna, is to reawaken our relationship with Krishna. And so very clearly, in this first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can find these four aspects. I will repeat them again for your reference. Offering obeisances, offering blessings, the qualifications of the student, and the goal of that work. Okay, so now let us focus on these six questions, one after the other. One, two, three questions. I'm reading 1.3, and now questions 1 through 6, the foundational questions of the Bhagavatam, are summarized by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Regarding the six questions of the sages, in his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam 1.2.1, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has summarized the six questions that the sages of Naimisharanya asked Suta Goswami as follows. 1. What is the ultimate benefit for mankind?
human society.
Yes. 2. Mankind, derived from Manu, the father of man, the father of human society. 2. What is the essence of all scriptures? The Bhagavatam, these verses that glorify the Bhagavatam, they explain that Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedic literature. And the sages, they also make a point. They say, there are so many scriptures. You have studied them from different authorities. Please tell us what is the essence of all Vedic literature. And so therefore, Bhagavatam, the Amala Purana, is called the ripened fruit of the tree of Vedic literature. Sometimes it is compared to cream on milk. 3. For what reason did the Lord take his birth from Devaki? Although he is Aja, birthless. 4. Describe the wonderful deeds of the Lord when he assumed the forms of Brahma, Rudra, etc. for the purpose of creating, maintaining, and destroying the universe. 5.
I thought we put that down to number 5.
Oh yes, it was switched. That's right. Thank you for pointing that out.
Well, it's all right in this order, because this is a summary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and they're not... This list, as I said, it's not necessarily connected to the verses that are specifically pointed out. So it can be switched or not switched in this list, because the specific verses are not identified in this list.
Did I read 5, or did I just say 5? I read it. 5. Fully describe the activities of Lord Hari's incarnations within the universe. And 6. Where has religion taken shelter after the Lord has retired to his own abode? So, these foundational questions of the Bhagavatam, based on, they are answered throughout the pages, throughout the 18,000 verses of this work. However, Sutta Goswami gives preliminary answers in chapter 2 of Canto 1 of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Jiva Goswami has shown us where these answers are found.
No, it says, Srila Jiva Goswami, and this is directly quoted from Gurijan Prabhu. Srila Jiva Goswami has commented that of these 6 questions, 4 answered in chapter 2, and 2 are answered in chapter 3. But again, exactly which questions answered where is not explained.
Okay, so Sahasra Maharaj has gone through chapters 2 and 3,
yes,
and found where these... based on Jiva Goswami's hint.
Based on, the hint and Srila Prabhupada's purports.
And Prabhupada's purports. Yes. He's gone through and found where the answers are to these 6 questions in chapters 2 and 3 of the first canto. So, let us go through and read these answers. I think a good way to do it might be to rotate, to give the bodies who have the overview opportunity. Is that okay?
And it might be easier if you read it, and then if there's any discussions.
Okay, so you have 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But we can continue discussions on Thursday.
Yeah.
Whatever we can't do today, we'll do on Thursday. Yes.
So we'll read these quickly then? Yes. Is that the idea?
Okay.
Next, the questions are specifically identified by verse, as are their answers, and I'm going to read more quickly because time is running out.
Unless you want to give a conclusion, and then we can continue that later.
I think it might, because according to this clock, there's really only 2 minutes left.
Okay.
I think we can just separate the discussion of this chapter into 2 classes, because this is really, this is the 6 questions, and just squeeze the discussion of that into 2 minutes. So we can discuss the 6 questions on Thursday, and we can give a summary conclusion now.
Yeah. So we will also have to wait for questions until Thursday, so that gives you more time to contemplate.
What thing you do is maybe summarize what you did, because you went through the introduction.
Yeah.
And give how that is Sambandhamide Prayojan and how that's like the foundation.
Okay, so in conclusion, this first chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is foundational to the entire work. We have an introduction here. The Vedic literatures don't necessarily have a section called introduction, but they do have an area called Mangalacharan where we can learn what the work is about, what the qualifications of the student are. And from this, we can know how we should approach the rest of the work. And so that is the basis for this study. These 6 questions, or the idea that Bhagavatam is based on questions and answers, is the lead that this study is following. It's going to be concentrating on the questions and the answers throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam to give us an idea of the logical theological, spiritual development of the work, then we can trace why certain stories appear, when they appear, and what they are in relation to regarding these questions and other sections of the book. And from this, it is hoped that all of us, teachers and students, will get a... we will be able to go deeper into Srimad Bhagavatam and thus live Bhagavatam and become Bhagavatas. That is the living Bhagavatam, which is the result, the natural result of studying Srimad Bhagavatam. So we will conclude here, unless we have some final comments from...
My comments all into these things now. Because I think what you said was...
As we announced yesterday, because of time constraints, we do have to end this class at 9 o'clock. And so we request you humbly, we will continue this discussion on the first canto, chapter 1. So please be here on Thursday, because tomorrow's break. And we'll try to get to your questions. I'm sure there's many. We'll try to... get your questions on that day. All right? So thank you very much for attending. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanandi Hari.